Well, good evening, everybody. My name is JP. I work as part of the staff team here at Grace Church. And I do this job really because 23 years ago, I had a life-changing encounter with Jesus Christ. And I was a teenager at the time. I came into a church building, a bit like this one, and attended one of the groups that they were running. And I was absolutely fascinated because there seemed to be something different about these people, something that I didn't have. There was something different about the way that they related together to one another. They seemed to talk of one another as being family. There's something different about the purpose with which they lived their lives. There was just this radiance about them, which I believed in God, but I didn't have what they had. And I was intrigued to ask them what it was that was so different about them. And they told me that Jesus Christ had come to earth, that God had become a man, and that he had died on the cross to forgive us of all the things that we have ever done wrong in life, past, present, and future, and that they had then given their lives over to Jesus, to following him. And I thought that this sounded amazing, why anyone would do this for me. I was aware of my own shortcomings, and so I wanted to give my life to Jesus too, and I prayed, and I expected it would be this big, spiritually transforming experience, and it didn't feel any different. And I was a little confused and tried a few times, you know, come on, God, I'm trying to give my life to you here, you know, a couple of times just to make sure he'd heard, you know. And I remember chatting to one of the people at the church. He said, well, if you meant what you said in that moment, then that makes you a Christian. That makes you a Jesus follower. And in that moment, just all of a sudden, there was just this incredible joy that started to arise within me. There was this beaming smile that I felt come upon my face. And I knew that my life was different from that moment. And really spent the next couple of years just looking into the significance of that moment and what had gone on. And looking at things like the evidence for the Christian faith. And examining, for instance, like the beauty and the complexity of the universe. And concluding that it's so incredible that someone really must have pressed play in the very beginning. Or the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead physically, that I found utterly compelling, and that we only conclude otherwise if we, in our human limitation, decide what is possible or not possible. And so really tonight, I would love to give you the opportunity to get to know him too, and I would love to talk to you about Jesus. And I'm aware that I do this amidst the Christmas traditions, and we're so grateful that you're joining us here tonight as part of your traditions. I hope this is helping you to get just a little bit more Christmassy. And Christmas traditions are a funny thing, aren't they? Because as time goes on, kind of trends come and go, and it leaves us, as we approach Christmas 23, with, I'm sure, a number of things that you think are wonderful ideas about Christmas, and then some others where you're like, why do people do that at Christmas? So for instance, I think it has been a good idea, a major upgrade, to take the disgusting vegetable that is mushy, overcooked cabbage and replace it with some kind of red cabbage spice caramelized equivalent. I think that has been a good thing. But a bad idea, saving opening all your Christmas presents until after Christmas lunch? I mean, what is that about? I don't know who came up with that. They obviously weren't very fun, is my conclusion. A good idea, looking at your Spotify Wrapped from the year. I think that's really fun. If you're not sure what that is, that's basically Spotify, the music streaming platform, just giving you some trends and what you've been listening to in the year. So top song in our households was one that we sing here regularly on a Sundays, and my kids really like. Second most played song in our household, Girl on Fire by Alicia Keys. I don't know if you look at me and think that that song particularly would characterize me in any way. Turns out it's in Sing 2, which is probably why it's up there. But a bad idea, matching family Christmas pajamas. What on earth is going on there? I should put my cards on the table and say that my wife absolutely loves them. And so she and our kids have matching pajamas. And normally we would try and present a relatively united front in our parenting of our children, except on this issue where it is all out warfare. She will openly say, "Daddy hasn't got these because he's being grumpy." I will respond with, "The reason I don't have them is because you all look really weird in them." But one recent trend that divides opinion, perhaps even more than the acceptability of tinsel, even more than whether Leverkusen are in fact nice or not, more even than whether Die Hard is a legitimate Christmas film or not, is this: the office secret Santa. Some people love it, don't they? They love the thrill, the secrecy, the surprise, the guessing who bought what, and then the big reveal at the end. And there's always roles in these kind of things, aren't there? You get the detectives who go around the office trying to kind of guess from little clues that people will give away as to who has who in the secret Santa. You get the spillers who really just don't care that it's secret and are quite happily just to willy-nilly just say who they're buying for. One of the secret Santas I was involved in last year involved the role of absentee, just didn't buy a present. Happy Christmas. Then you get the anarchists, the outright anarchists who do not stick to the £5 budget. And whilst the rest of us are spending a literal £5, are giving these lavish gifts over. Or they cheat, you know, they've got some like family-owned restaurant or something. So like, here's a voucher for a meal for two or whatever. But some people really hate it, don't they? Really hate it. I wonder if there's many in the room tonight really hate the idea of Secret Santa because you're buying a present for someone you don't know and the same's being done to you. You've got to open it in front of everyone and got to convey gratitude whether you like it or not. I'm involved in one in about 10 days' time, so I'm really going to have to watch my attitude in that, aren't I? But the haters would claim the randomness of presents that go on. I've heard stories of one person who was buying a gift for a lady in her 50s. I don't know what sorts of gifts would come to mind for you. He thought the natural thing to buy was Dalek bubble bath. Someone else got a belly button fluff remover at Secret Santa. And then my favorite one is that one guy, he gave a signed picture of himself for Secret Santa. Was he famous? No, he was not. He just gave that over. Here you go. But actually, the very idea of Secret Santa, you know, you got the exchange followed by the big reveal. It's all over Christmas, isn't it? We do it in all sorts of ways. We do family present swaps where we try and guess the present from the size or kind of rattling of the gift on Christmas Day or in some incorrect cases before Christmas Day. Or even this year's top film on top Christmas film on Netflix is Family Switch, where family members exchange roles and then comes the big reveal of what's going to happen and why it happened and why it was all meant to be and what have you. But this idea of the exchange followed by the big reveal, it's all over the Jesus story too. Because it's at Christmas time that we remember that Jesus exchanged the luxury of heaven to don humanity and live amongst us, to know and to appreciate, experience our pain. This is the architect stepping into the plan, as it were. The one who sustains the universe chose to be born. The eternal Son of God chose to be called Emmanuel, God with us. And why did he do that? Because he cares. For you, for your life. He knows what's going on below the glitz and glamour of Christmas. He'll still be there when the January blues hit. He sees the times where you feel stuck or guilty or confused. And he came, the Bible says, to be a light for all mankind. Not just in some kind of like, here's a nice way to be way, but to give you new life, a new start in him, to begin again, if you like. And you see it most in the people that Jesus exchanges with. There was a man who once came to Jesus and he had a life-defining illness. For him, it was leprosy. He felt very much like a social outcast. And his circumstances really had deprived him of much of what he felt that he needed. And I'm sure many of us in the room tonight could identify with something of that story. And he comes to Jesus and he says, Jesus, if you're willing, you can make me clean. That is to say, Jesus, if you're willing, if you want to, I know that you can change my life. And as he says that, I think he betrays a question that kind of is in all of our hearts somewhere. It's the question of, well, if there is a God, would he accept me? Would he come and live inside of me? And Jesus says these beautiful words. He says, I am willing. Be clean. And he heals him of his leprosy. It's a foretaste of what he was going on to do at the cross, where he cleanses us at the cross of everything that we've ever done wrong and everything that has ever been done to us. And he does that by exchanging, by swapping with us our broken life for his perfect record. And in the story, he gives the leper his life, as it were, his wholeness in return for the leper's uncleanliness. He brings the leper's exclusion on himself as he takes his place and heals him. In another exchange, Jesus is having dinner at someone's house, and this woman enters, and the story describes her as being really pretty broken. She knew that she'd done some things wrong in her life. She knew her inadequacy. And I think there again lies an undiscussed and yet prevalent feeling in society that we know that we're not the people that we want to be. We have a sense of our inadequacy in many different areas. And this woman, she's weeping, and she begins to pour this expensive perfume all over Jesus' body, and to wipe his feet with her hair. And it sounds kind of culturally strange to us, doesn't it? Until we realize that she's weeping both over her brokenness, but also because of the hope that Jesus brings to her. That in this act, what she's doing is she's anointing, that is getting ready his body for burial. That is, she's preparing a sacrifice to God on her behalf that will cover her. Because one day Jesus would go to the cross in her and in our place. And at the cross, he takes our mess, he takes our mistakes, he takes our brokenness on himself, and he gives to us in exchange his perfect life. And in Jesus' refusal to dismiss this woman, much to the anger of the onlookers, he validates it. He gives her a new unshakable identity of forgiven and free. He changes her life. It's some of the great exchanges of Jesus. You could go on, but really all of them are heading towards this big reveal. Every Secret Santa needs a big reveal at the end, doesn't it? If not, it doesn't work. I was once involved in one in an office where it was Secret Santa. You did the usual, you know, nominate a gift that you would enjoy, get someone secret, go and buy it. And then basically the end of it was pick your present off the table and on you go. Where's the big reveal? You basically just bought yourself a Christmas present. What's going on there? But the big reveal here is that he's come to save us, that he was born to die that we might live. The author stepped into the story on a rescue mission. And that's what captured me as a teenager all those years ago, that he would give his life for me. I knew my mistakes. I knew I wasn't perfect. I knew that there was more to life even than I could make of it, more than the hobbies that I enjoyed or the experiences that I could chase. I knew there was more. But that he would offer to take my sin, my confusion, my fledgling efforts and exchange them for his life, for an identity defined by him, for eternal life with him even. Well, that blew me away. Let me finish with this to show how this great exchange with a big reveal works. Several weeks ago now, there was someone that came to Grace Church for the first time, never been in a church building before. And he asked me if I could pray for him about some difficulties that were going on in his life. And I said I would be glad to pray for him, but would love to talk to him afterwards. And we went and sat down just kind of over in that corner there. And a friend and I sat down with him, and he just kind of opened up about some of the stuff in his life. And we said to him, you know, when we go around in life, like, we all get things wrong, don't we? We all make mistakes. There's things we know kind of for all of us. Like, I'm not sure that's the way I want to be. And it can feel like those things stick to us, doesn't it? Almost like a sort of written record on us. And we spend so much of life trying to kind of scrub them out, trying to look inside ourselves to find the answer. And yet we still know that we're not the people that we want to be. And there can be things equally that are done to us, like grave injustices, some of them horrific, that are done to us. And they too feel like they stick to us. And as I was sitting down with this guy, what we did was I said, you know, when Jesus went to the cross, what he did was he took these things, all the stuff of life that's written on us, and he took it from us. And he carried it all the way to the cross. He took it from us. He laid it at the cross. And in exchange, we took his garment, his life. Now, in the story, the guy's jumper was white, which is a much better illustration than this brown hoodie. But nonetheless, what we do now when we come to Jesus, when we give our life to him, is that we wear his life, as it were. And hey, we still get things wrong. We still mess up. But it doesn't get written on us anymore because Jesus has died to forgive those things. It goes on him at the cross. And that is life-changing. That changed my life those 23 years ago as a teenager. And as the band come up, you know, the big reveal of this story is that you really don't have to wait to know Jesus for yourself. You don't have to be good enough. You don't have to change something in your life. You don't have to sort yourself out. You can just come to him. He offers you life in all its fullness tonight. And so what we're going to do is that the band are going to sing a song, and really just to give us a chance to reflect upon these things. Really just tells the same story from a different genre, if you like, through the music. And then once they've finished, I'm going to pop back up here and I'm just going to pray a short prayer that anyone who wants to hear can just join in with it in their own hearts. And you can have this opportunity of knowing Jesus for yourself, having this offer of salvation that he gives.